Hi, everybody. Welcome to SEND Network's ongoing Training for Trainers resource. Thanks for joining us on our journey to learn together how to make your transformational training even better. We want to encourage and empower you to keep growing in your confidence and competence as a trainer. Now, here are the hosts for today.
Hi, everybody. My name's Rick Duncan. I'm with SEND Network Training, and we want to welcome you to our SEND Network Training podcast, where we're trying to help you as a trainer get better. And with me today is our co-host, and that is Peyton Jones out on the West Coast. So, Peyton, how you doing? What's happening out there in church planting world?
Well, we're doing good out here. I'm getting ready to church plant, so that's pretty cool. Bo Moffitt, one of our trainers, and myself are just kind of starting those early stages of praying through, you know, gathering and starting mission. And, you know, people were saying, hey, we want to hear more about that. And we keep saying, so do we, because we really have no clue what's going to happen.
And with us today is our guest, Daniel Yang. Daniel's the director of SEND Institute. Prior to directing that institute, he planted a church in Toronto. Was a part of recruiting, assessing, and training church planters through the SEND network. He's been on various church staffs, including Northwood Church, which is led by a mutual friend of ours, Bob Roberts. And prior to church planting, Daniel was an engineer for 8 years, has an MDiv from Southwestern Seminary, a BS in computer science from the University of Michigan. Well, we really appreciate what you're doing there with the SEND Institute to bring a lot of new ideas to the church planting world. So tell us a little bit about your story and how that intersects church planting.
Yeah, really. You know, I was an engineer for about 8-9 years, and I ran a little consulting business at the end of my engineering career. Long story short, had a lot of doubts about faith. So I enrolled into seminary, really just to study the Bible. It was kind of in the midst of that that I felt the missionary call. And so we started thinking about, my wife and I, where we could serve long-term vocationally. And we thought it was overseas, and the Lord opened our eyes to see the diversity and the need in North America. And then that's when we kind of learned about church planting. This is probably right around 2007, 2008. That's when I met Bob Roberts. He kind of gave me a different vision for kind of global ministries in North America. And so came on staff with Bob, and he was running GlocalNet, which was, you know, a really kind of influential church planting network. And came on staff with him. Got to see the ins and outs of what they do at Northwood, and, you know, traveled, you know, with Bob around the world. And so he sent us up to Toronto to plant a church. And it was really, I grew up Christian Missionary Alliance. My joke is till this day, I feel like I'm a missionary to the Baptists, although I fully embrace my my Baptist background now. But so Bob introduced me to Jeff Christofferson right around that time, 2009, 2010. So that's my entry into not just Southern Baptist life, but also the SEND network, where I guess it wasn't in existence at the time, but it was Toronto Church Planting where we were at, and eventually became SEND Toronto. So that's how we got connected. That's how I got connected into the SEND family, and eventually was invited to lead the SEND Institute here in Chicago about a year and a half ago.
So what was it about what Bob's emphasis was that was attractive to you? What did you learn from Bob about church planting and global initiatives?
Yeah, you know, it was the whole idea that the world is shrinking, and that you have to act locally and globally simultaneously. And so, and as somebody who comes from an immigrant refugee background, trying to make sense of, you know, my American experience, that really resonated with me. It was kind of the concept of being a third culture, you know, child. And so Bob really gave me some language for that. I remember sitting across the table from him one time, and he said, hey, you need to stop thinking like a minority. And I don't think he was being condescending, but he says, you need to stop thinking like a minority. You need to start thinking like a global citizen. And I think for the first time, that really gave me language for how I was feeling inside. And so that became kind of the paradigm through which I thought about church planting. And that's why Toronto was such an attractive city to us, because it's such a global city. And it's, you know, it's the most diverse city in the world, actually. 52% of people are born outside of Canada. So,
wow.
Yeah.
So how I mean, it sounds like the transition from Texas to Toronto was something that you relished. You were looking forward to that opportunity. But what are some of the differences between church planting as you saw it there in Texas and in Toronto?
Yeah. You know, I grew up in inner city Detroit, so probably going to Texas was more of a cross-cultural experience than it was going to Toronto, actually. Texas is its own nation, no doubt. So really, learning how to do ministry in an affluent suburban neighborhood in Dallas-Fort Worth was a challenge for me as someone who grew up in the inner city, because I had to rethink kind of the missional paradigms, because, you know, we tend to think about missionary encounters from, like, you know, more of a privileged place encountering a less privileged place. And how do you as a majority culture reach those who are in the fringe? That tends to be the process through which we process mission. Having grown up in inner city Detroit, immigrant background, it was in reverse. I had to ask myself, as a person of color, as an immigrant, as somebody who grew up in the projects, how do I incarnate myself into a white affluent suburb and do mission in that context? So to me, I mean, it was kind of my growth trajectory kind of went in that direction. So when I left Texas and went to Toronto, downtown Toronto, we planted Trinity Life Church with Mike and Missy Seaman. You know, for me, it was kind of a return to my urban roots, but I was equipped differently now because I felt like I had a more fully orbed life experience, because I had grown up in the inner city projects, had done 3 years in a white affluent suburb. And so I was less afraid of, you know, transition at that point. And my family was less afraid of transition. So it was easier, because we were less afraid, it was easier to kind of do, you know, the thing that Paul says in Corinthians 9, he says, you know, I become all things to all people so that I might save some. So I felt like it was a life experience that we had to encounter in order for us to really understand what Paul is saying there.
So obviously this podcast is directed to trainers of mm-hmm. church planters. How is training different in Texas versus Toronto? How would you coach somebody to train better in Texas and then better in Toronto? What's the difference there?
Yeah. So, you know, training in Texas, in the South, in cultures where, you know, the Christian faith tends to be, at least culturally, the majority way in which people process things. So you have a certain paradigm that you're already working with. You have a certain kind of understanding, assumption. You know, you start from a Christian premise when you're training church planters to engage in their culture in the South, specifically in Texas. And I think, you know, that's just as, I mean, and that's not a false place to start. I mean, even though I do think, you know, even places in the South, Texas included, is becoming less and less Christian, or at least nominally Christian. I think that still tends to be the premise. Now, if you're training in Toronto, that is not the premise. The premise is secular. The premise is religiously pluralistic. The premise is liberal culture. And perhaps the premise is often even an assumption of a hostile environment. And so I think it felt starkly different, because when we were training church planters in Texas, you can still do the launch large methodology and it still clicked with most people. In Toronto, less so.
Hmm. Yeah. Wow. We noticed that in Wales as well. And in most European countries where, you know, Christianity is kind of seen as having come, done its worst, and then left. You know, and people feel like they've got religious hangover. I mean, people really in post-Christian cultures find themselves resenting it, not so much because it's really strange, because when you look around, you're like, well, there's hospitals, schools, like the actual physical after effects of Christianity are good, mm-hmm. but there's a dissonance between, you know, how people are feeling. There's a resentment. You know, it's kind of like when teenagers feel like they've outgrown their parents, and they you know, here the parents provided all these things for them, and yet there's just this kind of like, you know, deep inbred kind of hatred of the parents. And I think it is because it's somewhat parochial, but Daniel, I want to ask you, Rick asked you specifically, how would training in Texas and Toronto differ? I want to ask you, because of your heritage from the Asian community, how would training possibly differ if, say, we were to go to the Asian community? What might be some of the differences we might note?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I work with a lot of church plant organizations, and one of their primary struggles is how do we actually contextualize our curriculum, our training, our systems to, you know, the I'm doing air quotes right now, you can't tell, but to ethnic church planters. You know, reality is we're all ethnic. There isn't, like, you know, some who are ethnic and some who are non-ethnic. But and so, you know, specifically, again, using Asians as an example, because we tend to be much more of a, you know, hierarchical, family-oriented community society. That's not always the case, but, you know, by and large, it is the case. You know, there are ways in which we could tweak our training to help Asian planters to mine their social networks. You know, to me, how do you plant churches within family systems? I know that's not how we would necessarily approach it, you know, if you're planting with Anglo or even African Americans, but with Hispanics, Asians, how do you actually mine the current family structures of a community and work in those structures? Because what happens is that if you don't ask that question, and if you begin to develop church planting structures outside of the existing structures, you're actually imposing an outside system into an already fully developed cultural system. And so these are really, you know, interesting questions. You know, we were training Pakistani South Asian planters in Toronto. And a big part of our struggle with using the training curriculum is that it was helpful to the planter, but it was difficult because they couldn't translate some of those concepts into their family social network structures, because it was a very organizational structure, whereas it was much more organic in the family structures. So I think taking those things into account is important.
How did being exposed to the Train the Trainer retreat change how you thought about training planters? Because frankly, for me, probably a little bit more on the information dump side of things, and then all of a sudden I'm learning a new paradigm of how to train. How did it impact you?
Yeah. So when I went through the Train the Trainer, and I think I might have been amongst, at least if it wasn't the first cohort, it was one of the very first groups, I think. This is what it did for me as a planter. So let me answer the question from that perspective. As the planter, I actually began to think and had a better vision for what a multiplying church would look like, because I began thinking of myself as not just how do we plant a church, but how do we plant a multiplication center? So thinking of myself, Mike and I, we were trained together. We planted Training Life together. We were trained together to be trainers. We started thinking about how does Training Life become a multiplication center? We are directors of a multiplication center. So going through the Train the Trainer curriculum, I think really gave us that philosophy. And then, you know, the actual curriculum itself was kind of a tangible implementation of, you know, what it looks like to be a multiplying church. So that was really helpful for me in terms of being a planter. And I think that it really gave us some tracks to build a multiplication center on. We also integrate a lot of things that we had learned from Bob as well, but the framework was there. And so I think that's important, because especially as a Send Network, you know, we talk about, you know, partnering with churches and actually, you know, the emphasis is on church planting teams and being a multiplying church. It really helped me to really have a philosophy of that.
So what are the elements of a multiplication center? Like, what are the ingredients that you say are necessary for that to happen?
Yeah. So, you know, so having an explicit vision for that, I think, is huge. It's, you know, as much as we want it to be organic and grassroots, I don't think it happens all the time accidentally. I think it much intentionality. So the way that you talk about it, I think when you begin raising up leaders, you know, you always think that this is a potential church planter. that we're raising up, even if they just end up, you know, leading your community groups or whatever it is. And then having immediate handles. I think, you know, what the early iteration of the Multiply curriculum, which eventually became SEND Network Training, it really gave us kind of the handles to begin bringing guys up like Adam and another guy named Bruce through the training process, and it gave them the imagination for what it might be like to plant a church. So we bought, as we were bringing other church planters through the training, we brought our own interns through it, and right away they started seeing a vision for that, and that was important. So they were, our interns were also a part of us helping to train other church planters, and that helped them to cast a vision for their own churches eventually.
I've heard several people say it's harder to find church planters today than maybe it used to be. And some of the fishing ponds have already been fished. So how do we increase the number of planters in the pipeline? You talked about church planting pipeline. How do we increase the number of planters that we can find in those pipelines?
Yeah. You know, I think the traditional fishing pools were, you know, youth pastor, associate pastor. We were looking for people who had a vocational call to ministry. And for 40 years, that was, you know, actually a great place to look. As we think about the future, I think we have to kind of think outside of that, you know, that, you know, clergy stream, I guess, and to see that vocational ministry isn't limited to just pastoral clergy. If we don't break outside of that, you know, I'm not a doomsayer. I don't, God's mission will prevail. But I think for those who lead networks and organizations that do church planting, they're going to feel like that pool is shrinking. And so, you know, how do you awaken those who feel called to different domains, you know, education, health, medicine, the arts? How do you awaken them to have a church planting vision within their sphere of influence? I think that's the creative task that a network leader is going to have and that a catalyst has right now.
Mm-hmm. So some of that bleeds over into the whole bivocational, co-vocational conversation.
Daniel, I want to ask you in follow-up to talking about multiplication centers. I mean, there's been some really innovative things that people have done. There's Sean Banesh just came out with his book on social entrepreneurship and church planting. Others are doing things like, you know, starting up shared workspaces and planting out of that, you know, instant income, instant space, you know, instant community. Lots of cool things are happening right now. And one of the things that always bothers me is how little creativity is actually put into church planning. You mentioned intentionality, which I think is really good. And I'm beginning to kind of really see the creativity that God not only delighted in when he made the world, but how some of that with church planting, because you're birthing something, you get to be a part of that creative process. I hate the carbon copy. I hate when guys are kind of lazy in their thinking. They just go into the same rut. What are some of the most innovative things that you're seeing in church planting that we can use to kind of stimulate that creativity in our church planters?
Yeah, great question. I mean, you mentioned one, social entrepreneurship. I think that's something that I don't know if we've thought enough about. You know, how do we actually engage in places where the loss and culture is most interested in engaging right now? Not for the sake of, you know, not the bait and switch, but to truly be about the causes that non-Christians are most concerned about. And seeing the kingdom come into those places. You know, I like the whole idea of the consumer economy expiring and giving way to a creator economy. Framing the task of church planting in terms of the creator economy, I think, is such an imaginative way to talk about the future. The consumer economy said, you know, we're creating something, come and and participate in it. The creator economy actually says, you know what, you can actually create, you can actually innovate. That's the advent of Uber and Etsy and Airbnb and kind of the gig economy concept. So I think in some ways we already, you know, the church has never had a lack of innovative people. Yeah, I was with Tampa Underground just this past week, and they're a very kind of creative network. And in some ways I was thinking, you know, I was amazing because the Salvation Army was doing some of the things that Tampa Underground is doing today at a very high level. We've always had innovators. We didn't feel the need to put the title pastor on them or the title missionary or church planter on them. They just were doing kingdom work, and they would see people gather. And then eventually you'd call a pastor to oversee that community that emerged. And I think that if we can get back to some of that, where we see people who are just in their everyday jobs, serving people, trying to make a difference in their community, seeing people come to Christ, I think, man, the reality is that prior to 40, 50 years ago, that's how most churches got planted. There wasn't this obsession on having the maverick church planter. I think we're getting back to some of that. We're kind of normalizing the conversation. It's becoming more of, you know, we're discovering, you know, what is the new frontier of North America. It's not geography anymore. It's more kind of ideas. It's more, you know, diversity. I'm excited about the future. I think our institutions are catching up to these realities. And we're usually about 10 years behind. But I think in the way that if we're not overcommitted to our systems, this is my last bit on this section. If we're not overcommitted to our systems, then I think we're going to free ourselves up to understanding more the potential innovation for the future. You need to have systems. Yep.
What is overcommitted to our systems look like? Where's the danger that we need to be aware of?
Yeah. So church planting as an industry, the church planting is, none of us, I mean, and I know Send Network well, we never use this language, and I don't think we don't intentionally think this way. But the reality is that we live in an industry where church planting has become an industry. You know, as a matter of fact, Ed and I, we go back and forth, and, you know, we're all friends with Exponential, but Exponential is kind of the trade show for our industry. If you think about that,
you're referring to Ed Stetzer.
Sorry, yeah, Ed Stetzer, yeah. And this is all very helpful, and this is all very useful, and it's all very probably even necessary. But if we're committed to building the industry, then I think it's potentially dangerous. I think God's creativity around planting the next 40 to 50 years of churches could potentially be outside of our industry, if that makes sense. You know, think about black swan type events that actually give birth to new things, you know. Like, for instance, Homeland Security was something that didn't exist prior to September 11, 2001. There are going to be a lot of things that are going to exist outside of our systems and our structures because of some black swan event. We need to be flexible and agile to those things.
Really, we've got you mentioned as an example, Tampa Underground, and I'm a huge fan of Tampa Underground. Love what they're doing. The difficulty, I think, with when you get into scalability, because a lot of people are looking at Tampa Underground, but the amount of funds that Brian has to raise every year, which is millions of dollars, right? To keep Tampa Underground going. Is there a more scalable model? And I'm asking that only because when we planted Refuge Long Beach, it was very similar to Tampa Underground, but it was the free version. But I'm asking, I'm not the guest here. I'm going to ask, what what is the way that we can scale what Tampa Underground is doing for the average church planner who says, hey, I suck at fundraising and I'm never going to be that, but I love what Tampa Underground's doing in spirit.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, I think what they've been able to capture and what others are too, you know, they're an example, but what others are able to capture is giving a pathway to those who feel called to missional ministry in a particular context without having to, you know, again, I mean, this is not downplaying the value of what any of us do, but there's very little place for dog and pony shows. There's very little place for, you know, kind of the culture that comes with church planting that we have today. And so you kind of remove a lot of those expectations and a lot of those things, and it becomes like the regular person trying to reach a regular neighborhood or a regular context. Now, you're right. I mean, Brian and his crew, they have to raise a lot of money because there's a lot of other things that they do. But I think the essence of what they do is transferable and doesn't cost a whole lot of money. And that is releasing the regular person to engage in a regular community with a little bit of training and a little bit of oversight. And so, and I think that's duplicable in any particular network, you know. Now, they've got their hub, they've got the nonprofits that they launch, but I, you know, that's more infrastructure. But I think the essence is releasing regular people. Yeah.
Well, tell us a little bit more about how we can get in touch with you, how we can learn from you. So I know you got a Twitter handle and all that business. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, love to hear from people. Our website is sendinstitute.org. You can see us at Facebook and Twitter at, you know, handle Send Institute, all one word. And then my personal Twitter is KOOBXWM.
Yeah, thank you for that. And I did tweet one of your statements already. The whole idea of, hey, let's not focus on planting churches, let's plant multiplication centers. That changes the game. So thank you, Daniel, for the time. We appreciate your insights and look forward to chatting with you in the future.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening today. Our mission at Send Network Training is to equip multiplying leaders with reproducible systems to plant more healthy churches. You can follow us on Twitter at Send Network Trainers or on Facebook at Send Network Church Planter Trainers. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. This podcast was made possible by the Send Network of the North American Mission Board.